Modern dance. Let's start with the big question. Why would someone choose dance as a career? It's a tough life in many respects. First, dancers, like most artists, make very little money. Second, even top-notch dancers are relatively unknown. And third, dancers put their bodies through an unreal amount of wear and tear. Then, looking specifically at modern dance and being a choreographer, the stakes get higher. This form of dance is known for being abstract, and at performances, many audience members seem confused by what they see on stage. And who really knows what modern dance choreography is?
Well, I guess I'm not exactly sure.
It's hard to interpret.
I don't know anything about it. They got dance schools all over, but I don't pay any attention to them.
I don't always get it, but sometimes I feel a little envious of the dancers that they can express themselves in a way that even as an audience member makes me slightly uncomfortable.
Angular motions. That's what I remember most.
It is a body art form of art to music.
It was interesting, but it was also unintelligible. I didn't know what was going on. So that's what made it interesting, but also frustrating.
Well, I see a lot of what they call modern dance, and I don't even call it dancing, you know.
So what compels a person to create dance and do this for a living?
I think I was lucky enough to be touched early, by the just stupendous beauty of using your body and your mind.
That's choreographer Liz Lehrman, who is 59 years old.
The other thing is, I haven't found anything as powerful as this in the sense of really having impact in doing the things that, you know, really interest me and I'm curious about. I do think dance specifically and art in general is pretty dismissible. Like, I see its impact, but that doesn't imply that the world understands its impact. I think it's quite dismissible, and that a lot of that's because we allowed it to be thought of as extraneous, elite, that kind of stuff. So I think re-ingraining it, or, you know, reweaving it deeply back into the culture is what's required.
In this next half hour, we'll explore the inside world of dance through conversations with choreographers. We'll hear about the creative process and what inspires them. I'm Jessica Lockhart. In the summertime, many dancers hone their skills at workshops where they get the chance to live and dance with some of the country's best choreographers. This July, the country's three biggest dance festivals are all celebrating major anniversaries. In Durham, North Carolina, the American Dance Festival celebrates its 80th year. In Beckett, Massachusetts, Jacob's Pillow turned 75. And then there is the relatively young upstart in Lewiston, Maine, the Bates Dance Festival, which is marking its 25th anniversary. And just like in a family where the baby or the youngest sibling is given the space to do things a little differently, so does the Bates Dance Festival. Rather than emphasize the performances, the core concept at Bates is to cultivate dance by giving artists the space to follow their creative impulses, even if audiences don't quite understand what they do. This is all orchestrated by festival director Laura Fore.
I think what we're known for and where our focus is really on gathering together a supportive community of artists in which people are learning, teaching, creating, presenting, and all of those things have equal emphasis.
Fore is a whirlwind of energy. She spends endless hours organizing the artists, which can be as tough as trying to herd cats. Fore has a knack for detail, which is essential to dealing with creative people, and her intensity is matched by her genuine broad smile and laughter. She's a former dancer and organic farmer. These two unrelated skills have helped shape her position as a curator. Being a farmer taught her how to tend and cultivate. Being a modern dancer taught her artistic design and vision. Using these tools, she attempts to create a utopian dance community, providing a haven where artists are encouraged to conceptualize. Fore's fierce passion for dance emerges as she talks about the many choreographers she has worked with as a producer of the festival. This year, the Bates Festival is bringing back many prominent choreographers like Liz Lehrman that have worked at Bates over the past 25 years.
Liz is a bellwether. She's, you know, been called by many, many people a visionary. She is a person who speaks about and represents sort of Jewish culture, who, of course, became well-known in the 80s for her intergenerational company, Dancers of the Third Age, and for the whole notion. I mean, she has expanded the idea of who dances and why, that everyone dances.
Who gets to dance? It grew out of some early work I did with older people. This was in the 70s after my mom died. And I needed old people to be in this piece about her. And that's the thing, you know, you break rules. Sometimes you don't break, you know, I'm like too well raised to like break rules just for the sake of breaking rules, although now I do. But at the time, I needed something that drastic. You know, I had to have these old people. There was nothing I could do about that. And so I marched off and found them. And of course, my entire life changed because of that.
Lehrman then added older and disabled dancers to her professional company called the Dance Exchange in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Lehrman's soft-spoken and graceful manner belies her intense dynamic presence that fills the room. Her intellectual curiosity has led to many unusual theatrical dance works.
Sometimes I make dances because we get a commission, like when the Harvard Law School called us and said, would you make this piece about the 60th anniversary of Nuremberg, or at least in honor of that. It's really interesting to get commissions because frequently they are not things I've thought about. And if you're lucky enough, they turn you left. You go somewhere you never knew you'd be, and you get excited. So that's great. But sometimes I make dances, it's almost like I commission myself. And that comes out of, typically, my wanting to know something. Like, a long time ago, I wanted to understand the defense budget. This was right after Reagan was elected, and I just couldn't figure out the number. Like, when they talked about $1 billion, I just couldn't fathom it. So I made a dance called 9 Short Dances about the defense budget and other military matters as a way to help me understand. And I sort of, in that sense, I'm sort of like an every woman. I think I'm not the only one who doesn't get it. And if I can figure out a way to express that, someone else will find it valuable.
Okay, quick modern dance history here. Modern dance is all about innovating and breaking the rules. When modern dance first began, it was like what painter Jackson Pollock did for art or Philip Glass for music, creating something new. It all began back in the early 1900s with the mother of modern dance, Isadora Duncan. She was everything that ballet was not. Instead of wearing toe shoes, she danced barefoot. Instead of wearing tight-fitting tutus, she wore loose, flowing tunics that showed her curves and flesh. And the movement she created was earthy. Unlike ballet's formal gestures and control, Isadora Duncan skipped and hopped and flowed. And the modern dancers that have followed Duncan continue to break out of the norm by creating movement forms and patterns never seen before. While ballet's ideal might be jumping higher, modern dancers might search for movement performed by lying on the floor. Because modern dancers strive to be different and less literal than ballet, some audience members find the work unsettling because of the abstract nature. But modern dance choreographers start with a concrete idea, and then they bend it to create something new and unusual. This can be seen by the commissioning work of Laura Foer. She helped produce an internationally acclaimed dance piece from Philadelphia choreographer Rennie Harris.
The artist has a spark, has an artistic a starting point, an idea, something that they're passionate and excited about. And I think Rennie's first big work, Roman Jewel, is a really great example, and it's one that I often recall because I found out that Rennie was thinking about this idea and working on a script.
You know, basically, I was just taking the story of West Side Story, and I wanted to make, you know, like a hip-hop version of it. And then when I saw Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet and got inspired to make it Roman Jules. And so then I started saying, okay, if it's Romeo and Juliet, I need to take some foundation from Romeo and Juliet. And I started to take some of the Elizabethan text and reinterpret it for regular language, for contemporary language, so to speak. And then the dancers started with that as a script, and then they slowly began to add their own things to it, because some of the dancers were poets.
Oh, I can come up? Word. Starlight is bright. I wish tonight was the night. Stories and fairy tales are played out right. From episodes to saga. Dialogues is written in the scripts. Mm-hmm.
The dancers are dressed in baggy pants and sneakers, the everyday clothes that young people wear. As they recite the poetry on stage, they move their bodies with gestures known in breakdancing as popping, waving, and ticking. The control and strength required to isolate these gestures has audience members cheering and hooting, making the dance concert seem less formal and more interactive. The dancers then, in unison, do a series of turns and jumps that are so acrobatic, it brings the audience into silenced awe.
The unspoken rule of hip-hop, adapt to your situation. I'm not trained in modern dance, ballet, jazz, or African. I see myself as using hip-hop movement and stretching the boundaries with it, basically, you know what I mean? And then I also see myself using movement. That the idea of pure movement was, you just, if the movement's dope, if it looks good, use it.
Harris first began performing as a breakdancer when he was 14 years old. His company is called Pure Movement. Harris took hip-hop movement usually associated with breakdancing, seen performed on the streets, and brought it inside into the theater. Now here's another example of how modern dance challenges what we take for granted. Harris took a risk by using not classically trained dancers and putting them into the theater and then juxtaposing hip-hop and Shakespeare. Roman Jewels became a full evening-length show. To produce performances like these takes a lot of time and money. At the Bates Dance Festival, Laura Four has put a priority on making sure dancers are given this time, space, and money to work on these big projects. Four has commissioned many new dances during her 20-year tenure as the director of the festival.
Virtually every piece of dance work we do today has original music and video in it. And I think my own interest, I think there's always a very strong subjective, personal sense of taste in a presenter's work, and it's, you can't deny that. And I think my interest has become more and more contemporary in a way, and yet it's always grounded in what one might call the human condition. I'm interested in work that's about something.
Let's take a moment to think about what it means to be a producer. Imagine Hollywood, where movie making relies on a person overseeing production and backing the script with money. Well, that's the role of the producer, and that's how it also happens in the dance world. Being produced is highly competitive because there just isn't a lot of money to be had, and dancers are all vying for the same grants and commissions. With so many choreographers looking for work, it takes something special to attract the attention of Bates director Laura Four.
What makes a choreographer's work stand out? Well, I think it's the person behind the work. I work with people. I'm not just buying a piece of work. I have relationships with the artists because I am really trying to convene a community rather than just, again, present a work. B.B. Miller is a wonderful example, I think. My first year at the festival, I went to a performance of B.B.'s in New York and had an opportunity to meet the company afterward. And I was so struck by her as a person, you know, as a spirit, as a thinker, as a mover, you know, multiple aspects of her personality and presence as an artist. I invited her to come to Bates. So she was the very first artist I invited, and we continue to work together 20 years later.
Choreographer B.B. Miller is 56 years old and lives in Ohio and has had a dance company for over 20 years. Miller likes to work collaboratively with musicians, videographers, and animators. The process of adding different multimedia to her choreography can make a project take years to complete. Her latest dance was 3 years in the making, and it began by a trip she took to Eritrea.
This is like an experience that lots of us have when we're traveling, where we are immersed in a different culture where we are the foreigners and everybody else knows exactly what the codes are. And it's not that the place was completely foreign. I mean, there are guys in Nikes and windbreakers, but I felt there's a particular kind of energy of motion, of glance, of body that is theirs, the way I have mine. And after a while, I just started trying to wonder, how could I recreate that sense of difference for myself?
So I think in some ways, she may be the artist who challenges audiences the most in terms of the work not being literal, and really you have to go in open to sort of going with what happens and the process and the sense of it without being able to explain it. It's very non-literal and non-linear. But we have tried very hard to, I would say, build informed audiences for dance by giving them ways into the work, something of a map without explaining the work, because I'm not interested in doing that, but by employing the incredible skills of a dance historian, Suzanne Carboneau, to do pre-performance talks where she talks about the artist and their whole body of work and helps to contextualize the work.
Suzanne Carboneau is a dance critic in Washington, D.C. She has spent many summers teaching dancers at the Bates Festival the art of analyzing and critiquing dance. At a typical pre-performance lecture, she helps the audience along, almost as a guide or a teacher might do, to encourage them that while they watch, not to give up, even if it doesn't make sense.
I think that Beebe's after the idea of what happens to us when we land in a place that's unfamiliar, that's foreign, a place that we lose our bearings completely, at a place where suddenly we are the outsider. And looking at people who we think of as outsiders, but they're the insiders. So there's a kind of reversal of perspective from the usual way we operate in our lives. And what happens to us there? I think we even see that physically in the work where dancers are upside down for long periods of time, and she literally has flipped the world.
On stage, two dancers face each other, and every time the boom sounds, they arch their torsos backwards to the floor like they are getting knocked over. They almost tip over, but instead of falling, they stay backwards in this uncomfortable position. They recover only to do it again and again. Then two more dancers join them. The audience witnesses the stress on the dancers' backs as they do this backbend 19 times. And while the dancers are moving, there is a video projection of images of birds and clouds floating across the stage.
How can the dance be secondary to the imagery? And or become the accompaniment. And that was, I felt really important to do when it gives the eye a chance to imagine in a cinematic way and let the dance kind of accompany that.
Reality check time again. Why would anyone decide to work in a field where by choice they put their body through agonizing moves? Dancers are asked to contort and repeat movements that are so foreign to how the body naturally moves, and they do this for hours and hours a day. At the 3-week Bates Dance Festival, students take classes ranging from technique to business to theory.
So, dancers, choreographers,
can we go first?
Can we go first?
That's New York City choreographer Sean Curran teaching a class at the Bates Dance Festival called Making Dances. A typical day for a choreographer might begin in the studio teaching a technique class to dance students or company members. A technique class involves moving different body parts and sequences to challenge the mind and warm up the muscles. Modern dancers can appear to be cat-like in their flexibility and ease of stretching and rolling on the floor, but they also train to move their bodies in quick, powerful jumps and turns. A design class like this one being taught by Curran involves helping the students actually learn the craft of designing a dance. A class is typically 1.5 hours long. Next, it's time for the rehearsal. This can last for 2 to 4 hours. During the rehearsals, the choreographer uses many approaches to move from conceptual ideas into physical movement. Choreographer David Dorfman has been, as he calls it, obsessed with the state of the world. He used this preoccupation to create his newest dance that looks at the radical anti-war group from the 1960s and 70s called the Weathermen.
I wanted to make really strong, powerful movement that was, in a way, this idea of a state, like really like reaching out almost as if to strike not a person, but like the space around you, to make an indent, to make a difference in your environment some way. So this sharp linear movement was meant to be almost, you know, young kids, activists in the street coming together, and then at the same time, a reference to a militarization of that same notion. We were working with a writer, Anne Washburn. She came into rehearsals for a week. Came back, I said, Anne, I got this idea. You know, it's like this idea of, how we can get so sentimental about things that are out of our control, but then peculiarly unsentimental about things that we're actually doing that lead to people's deaths. So she wrote this, what we call killing math, a monologue that Jen Nugent speaks. If you had to sum it up, it's simple. You kill, you save. If I kill 10 people, I can save 30. If I kill 10,000, I can save 3 million, and on and on. And
so if I kill 9 people, I could save 30. If I kill 15, I could save 47. So if I killed 52 people, I could save approximately 167 people.
As the speaker walks off stage, three pools of light appear with three dancers standing side by side. Suddenly, with the gracefulness of a cat, one dancer jumps straight up and, stretching out, lands onto the other dancers to create a human bridge. This movement is done very softly and looks effortless. After the audience sees the still tableau, the three dancers dissolve and return back to standing still. The quiet movement creates a soothing sense. Laura Fohr from the Bates Dance Festival was one of the people who helped commission Dorfman's work.
I think David has a very astute political sense and has very passionate feelings about what's going on in the world and the issues that we're grappling with in this current global climate. And he makes work that has a humorous edge, but at the same time is making a very strong political statement. And he has this way of doing it, I think, that really reaches around and grabs you. The piece, this latest work, Underground, is really dealing with the issues of our time. Terrorism. Is it ever okay to kill?
And it's like, that's what we need to learn. It's like, when you're crossing the line and when your inner violence is affecting the world, we're all violent inside. We all have anger. But when do we get this privilege of condoning it? I say never.
I really am an intermediary between the artists and the public. And if I am not willing to take risks in the same way that artists take risks and put them on stage and help them to create their work, that work isn't going to be available to the public.
The last few years have been hard on the arts due to the current conservative political climate that influences funding. And although it would make perfect sense to design dance that isn't provocative as a way to stay below the political radar, that is not what these choreographers have done. The topics of interest that they have used in their recent dances are anti-war, human genome research, Islamic religion, genocide, and racism. Not your typical Nutcracker or River Dance type of entertainment. B.B. Miller's soft-spoken, gentle manner and warm smile makes everyone comfortable when they meet her. As an African-American choreographer, she has addressed race, gender, and class issues with subtlety in her choreography.
My company was performing in L.A., same time as when I met Rennie Harris, and the white dancers in my group were in the dressing room with all these other mostly black dancers, and, you know, very friendly, it was fine, but he said, you know, this is the first time I've been a minority in this kind of a rehearsal situation. And I went, oh, man, I feel like that all the time. So the piece called Going to the Wall was an examination of that.
Yo, how many mics do we rip on the daily? Send me, say, many money. Send me, say, many, many, many. How many mics do we rip on the daily? Many money. Send me, say, many.
Choreographer Rennie Harris is a formidable sight. His tall body is solid muscle, and he has long hair with dreadlocks. On stage, he commands your attention. After doing a few serious dances, he planned to make a lighthearted piece that looked at how the hip-hop community had adapted black Muslim slang. As he began to work on the dance, it evolved into a story about the religion of the world, and when he was ready to premiere it, it was 2002, and the United States was about to invade Iraq.
And so my happy dance that I thought I was going to do didn't turn out to be that. it shaped itself. It literally shaped itself. So it's all about me just still journeying. I'm trying to have voice at the same time, but I don't have voice. I can't get over the pain of living. So my voice is just stymied. You know, my regular stance is not erect. I'm just crouched. You know what I mean? What I'm a visual embodiment of what pain looks like inside of you.
Choreographer Liz Lehrman seems to have an enormous amount of patience. She wants to understand the ideas that intrigue her, and she takes the time to know her subject matter before she presents her take on it to an audience.
There's an amazing book called The Bone Woman by Korakoff, and she was 23 when she went to Rwanda. But I was very moved by her, and so we read some of the paragraphs aloud in rehearsal.
I went to help prepare testimony for the tribunals. I had known for years that I wanted to help end human rights abuses by proving that bones can talk. I also wanted to return bodies to their families. Since childhood, I've known that I would do this work.
During the performance, as the audience hears this narration, two dancers sit on stage in a pool of dim light. One dancer is slumped over lifeless and is held in the other woman's arms. The dancer examines the lifeless body with slow, deliberate movements.
My first day on the job in Rwanda, I crouched on a slope under a canopy of banana leaves, placing red flags in the dark soil wherever I found human remains. Let's put it this way. On that day, I ran out of flags.
Can audience members make sense of what these choreographers present on stage? Dance critic and historian Suzanne Carboneau believes we are all natural observers and that we're able to read everyday body language, so why not dance?
Everybody has an entry point to understanding that happens on a level where if you just open your eyes and give yourself over to the dance and receive the information, that you can read what is happening on those bodies on an instinctual level. I think we're all great readers of movement, actually. I think we may not trust our ability to do that, but in fact, we read movement before we learn language as children. And we're very close observers and acute observers of movement.
War, rape, bigotry, and genocide might not be the types of issues we associate with dance, but these modern dance choreographers are creating work that reflects what they feel needs to be looked at and examined. And the difficulty that some people find with contemporary dance's abstract nature seems to work in the choreographer's favor here. By allowing the freedom to tackle difficult issues without being too literal, modern dancers can speak their minds through their bodies. Designing Dance was produced by Jessica Lockhart. Funding was provided in part by a grant from the Maine Arts Commission, an independent state agency supported by the National Endowment for the Arts, and by the John Anson Kittredge Educational Fund. Original music by Albert Mathias, Jonathan Biepler, Darren M. Ross, Han Rowe, and Bob Ian. Special thanks to Josh Gleason and Claire Holman. You can find more information about the Bates Dance Festival at bates.edu.dancefest.